You've selected Breaking Ground, a podcast brought to you by Ground Engineering Magazine and the Ground Forum. If you're a first-time listener, you might not be aware we discuss topics such as sustainability, technical developments, major projects, and career profiles. To find out what this episode has in store, join me, Steve Hadley, after this break.
At Central Piling, we have a fleet of continuous flight auger, rotary board, and driven rigs of various sizes. This caters for most piling and retaining wall needs. Our team's technical, logistical, and operational strengths provide clients with a flexible and reliable design and build solution across England and Wales. We pride ourselves on understanding the environment within which we work and being a responsible contractor. To ensure greater efficiency and meet our growth targets, we are always developing our people, plant, and services. We now offer a plant and operator hire service, including ancillary equipment. For more details, please visit centralpiling.com or phone 01787 474 000. That's 01787 474 000.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Breaking Ground podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about recruitment, education, and career development within geoscience. To help me do that, I'm going to be talking to Julia Hill, from a geotechnical engineer from Roger Bullivant. Julia is the chair of the FPS Early Careers Group. Also, we've got Emily Riley, senior chartered engineer at CGL, and Emily is the BGA, the British Geotechnical Association Early Careers Group chair for London and the South West. Finally, we've got Nick Corr, not at the early careers stage, Nick, but very much in tune with the issues that that students and people embarking on a career within geoscience have in their mind. So I think, Nick, it's probably a good place to start with you, because I'm aware that we'll have even school students listening to this podcast as well as university students. Let's just define geoscience, first of all. What are we actually talking about here? Because a lot of the podcasts in the past have been focused around particular disciplines, but geoscience is quite broad, isn't it, Nick?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really fantastic subject to study. And I guess I would define geoscience as the study of the planet and how various geological processes have influenced the way that the planet works and how the planet looks in simple terms. And I guess what we do as sort of geological engineers or geotechnical engineers is understand that those processes and then relate those to the built environment. So what geological processes are occurring and how do they impact on us as human beings and on our infrastructure, and conversely, how our infrastructure actually affects the geology and our planet.
Yeah, and there's all sorts of different jobs. My seven-year-old at the moment's interested in being a paleontologist, and I think that draws a lot of people into the geoscience community. Interestingly, Julia and Emily both did first degrees that perhaps aren't directly related to the career choices that they made. Julia, you did earth science, I think, so it was just a slight tangent from where you've ended up.
So I did geology at the University of Liverpool. So I was there for 4 years and fully enjoyed it. It was definitely an experience, and in between the analytical side of geology and dealing with the facts and figures, but then also being outdoors and trying to understand the geological formations and what caused them.
Good stuff. But you now work within more of a geotechnical design role for foundations and retaining walls.
Yeah, so I'm a geotechnical engineer at Roger Bullivant, and you're correct, Steve. I deal with retaining walls and piled foundations, and it is a sideward step, but you're still dealing with the ground, but you're also then applying the interaction of soil and hard rock geology to to pile design and how they interrelate.
Emily, you studied geological oceanography. Tell me a little bit more about that course.
It's a bit of a niche title, isn't it?
It certainly is.
So it's very similar to the marine geoscience, the course that I think Plymouth University used to run. But mine was up in Bangor, northwest Wales. And again, it was kind of a hybrid degree course. We did still do kind of fundamentals of geology, the formation of the earth and whatnot, with more of an ocean focus. So, we looked at kind of ocean currents, that kind of aspect, but always looking at geological landforms and how they developed.
What was it that appealed to you about oceanography, and what was it that caused you to have that sort of shift in your career to what you do now?
When I was younger, at secondary school, I always had a fascination with how the ocean came to be and exploring the ocean. There's a lot that we haven't touched before, and I've always had an interest in geology. What I learned at university was quite a wide-ranging in terms of the modules studied, and it made me realise that I quite like to investigate the ground and the ground conditions that we have. And I could bring that from offshore, as it were, onshore. And in my current role as a geotechnical engineer, it's my job to figure out what the ground conditions are at a site, how we can use those to our advantage, and also what ground hazards there may be and how we might need to design accordingly to manage those.
Brilliant. And interesting, you were at Tideway. So Tideway is this big scheme in London, the sewer scheme, and were you able to use any of your, not quite an ocean, but presumably there was quite a few relevant skills that you picked up there?
Absolutely. Tideway is a very complex problem and construction project. It needed lots of different approaches for the various sites. I worked on the eastern section, which was the deepest section. Fundamentally, we were operating in the chalk. But every single site had logistical constraints, different depths of rock, the presence of London clay or not. So you always had to have a robust approach, and you couldn't take all of your processes and move them on site to site. You always had to adjust how we were operating. And I think having a science-based degree in that sense of problem solving and knowing how to tackle that next site was really great to have, for sure.
Yeah, and then you've taken a shift more into a sort of site investigation consultancy role since your time with a contractor.
Yeah, it's perhaps a little strange to move from such a large infrastructure project working for a main works contractor to then move to a smaller organisation. But for me, having the experience of knowing, what ground investigation techniques work, quite frankly, and which ones were less successful, and also dealing with the plethora of investigation techniques we had the budget for, I can now put forward more creative proposals to the smaller to medium-sized projects, and hopefully we can begin to adopt some of those. So I think it was a very good experience to have, and it's interesting now for me to carry, hopefully, some of that forward to the new projects.
Good. Well, you've certainly picked up a lot of experience in quite a short space of time. Julia, tell us a little bit more about what got you into geotechnics in the first place and geoscience.
I suppose it's probably going back maybe 20 years now. And I've always had a love of the outdoors and a love for science and been really inquisitive with regards to landscapes. And that led me to probably physical geography at secondary school. And I had great teachers that were really enthusiastic about the subject. And I was taught geology at A-level, which then kind of cemented the fact that this is what I wanted to study at university level. And just going back to what Emily said with regards to the geology and the degree and how that is applied, I think by doing geology, and in especially the role that I'm in now, you have an understanding of the depositional environments in terms of how the soils and the rock was put there. So then how that can influence your pile design, which I think is really important.
Yeah, it's a really key fundamental. And Nick, you'll, I'm sure, make that a big part of your course. And you've got a real suite of courses there at Portsmouth, haven't you? Why don't you tell us, tell the listeners a little bit about the range of different options at Portsmouth University?
We run three geoscience degree pathways at Portsmouth. We have a degree in geoscience, straight geology. So that's sort of a course that many universities across the UK would run. And then we have two more specialist degrees. We've got a degree in paleontology. So we so this is a very popular course at the moment, I think fundamentally because I think virtually every week on the radio or on the TV, some weird and wonderful dinosaur footprint or dinosaur head or whatever it might be is discovered somewhere in the UK or somewhere across the world. And it's quite a fascinating subject. Lots of students are quite switched onto it. It's a really hardcore science, but it has a lot of 3D interpretation using lots of interesting analytical techniques with it. So it's a very popular course. And finally, the course that I'm most familiar with is our degree in engineering, geology and geotechnics, which has been running now for almost 55 years. I actually did the course myself back in the day. I won't tell you when. You can guess if you like.
Well, I do you know what? I looked at it and I thought, he's not that old, is he?
I know. Can't be true, can it?
No, you're looking well on it.
I graduated in 1984. How about that? So you can work out how old I am.
Do you know the other thing, Nick, that I meant to ask you? You were a doctor of philosophy. Now, how does that work within geoscience? Sorry, I know this is slightly off topic, but it just tickle my curiosity.
Well, you can either be a medical doctor, and then in virtually every other research PhD is a doctor of philosophy. That's just the way it is.
That's what it's called. Okay.
Yeah, that is what it's called, because you're whether it's a doctor in the humanities or whether it's in the sciences, it's the philosophical answering of some sort of question that you're trying to answer and trying to advance knowledge.
Okay.
So it's that sort of philosophical aspect. So
lots of chin stroking still.
Yes. I did that quite late in life. I didn't do that straight after my degree. After I'd been in a period of work, I then came back to university to lecture at Portsmouth and eventually did a PhD.
Well, thank you for indulging my curiosity there. I know you also belong to a group called UK Geoscience, and you, as a group and as an individual, you've clearly got some concerns at the moment about the number of students coming into the industry. Can you put a few figures around that and perhaps a hypothesis for why we might be challenged?
Okay, yes, a good question, Steve. So, yeah, I'm the chair of UG UK, so University Geoscience UK. So we represent all, or most, should I say, geoscience departments in the UK at universities. And we are really very concerned about the demise in number of students coming into universities doing wanting to take geoscience. Just to put some sort of numbers on it, since 2014, there's been a 43% drop in the number of students enrolling. And with the demographic decline, that's a sort of net reduction of about 33%, which is quite a lot in terms of student numbers. And that has had quite a big consequence in the viability of courses in the UK. Universities now sort of operate as businesses, and so there's always some value, there's a value attached to a student, etc. So as soon as that course becomes less commercially viable, it's looked at quite carefully by the executive in a university. So last year, three courses closed down or were prevented from recruiting. That was Derby, the degree at Derby, the degree at University of Western England, and the University of Brighton. And the year before that, Kingston, the University of Kingston, closed their geology school.
What's the tipping point for making a profit on a course? Is there a certain number of students?
I think it's very difficult to give you a fundamental answer to that, because every university will have a different model of how they spit up all the money that comes into the universities, etc. So that's actually quite difficult to answer as UG UK.
We've heard from two young people that are really enthused about joining the industry. So what's the issue? Why aren't people coming in?
So I think anecdotally, there's no actual baseline research been done on geoscience, but anecdotally, the feedback we get from students and from employers and from teachers is that the feeling is that geoscience is seen as potentially one of the problems with respect to climate change. It's seen as a dirty subject. It's generally speaking, it's white middle class males that tend to do a degree in geoscience. That is changing over time, but it's still quite male dominated. There's, I guess, a drinking culture attached to doing a geoscience degree, and that puts off quite a large swathe of society, I think. There is a very poor understanding of what geoscience is all about from both teachers, careers advisors, and very importantly, parents. And what is never really put across is actually geoscience is fundamentally the cure for, is the solution for climate change. When you think about the energy transition, when you think about critical minerals, when you think about just understanding climate change, all of those things are based and rooted within the geological sciences, the understanding of that. So, and that needs to be put across.
Yeah, so we can dispel some of those myths, Nick, but we could probably spend a whole episode on doing that. We can address a few of the points, but part of this is about connecting with people in a slightly different way. I mean, Julia, you've recently been through university. Do you think that's some of the things that Nick's describing there are fair in terms of what the group of students look like, what the student experience is like, or is that inaccurate?
Yeah, I would second that, to be honest. And I found with geology, there is a higher 50-50 ratio for male and female, right, comparing that against perhaps a civil engineering degree. I think that's more male dominated. But I think the problem also lies is, and as Nick rightly touched upon, is the misconception of what geology is and also engineering, because, you know, I'm now in the engineering industry and this is what I want to push to the next generation. But it's also their parents and the people around them that influence the students and the next generation, because if they don't know what geology is and don't know that there are a plethora of jobs available and you can do very well within this industry, and if that's not highlighted, then sometimes they're likely to choose a different career path or a different course because they aren't aware of the opportunities that are available.
Yeah, I'd like to say two things. Firstly, in terms of career opportunities, you can get extremely well paid as within this industry, you know, compared to other industries. The remuneration can be very, very good, so it's worth checking that out, or what different job roles offer. But secondly, and I think probably more importantly, is that we do and we will play a really important role in addressing climate change. Things like geothermal, and there's been a recent podcast that I did on geothermal energy, will be an important part of energy generation in the future. And it's important that we have the engineers and the operators that are skilled to come up with those solutions. And all of the different types of foundations, we're trying to make more environmentally friendly. So, all right, construction might be viewed as part of the problem, but we're certainly going to be part of the solution. Nick, I think you want to come in with a point there.
I think one really important thing that we need to understand is that it's resilience to climate change that is really important. And, you know, with ever-increasing intense rainstorm events, lots of intense drying, then the prevalence of things like landslides, mudslides, etc., get accentuated. And it's part of the geoscience community's role to understand that and then to be able to advise and design and mitigate resilience. And there's also another really big important thing is water. Groundwater. I mean, that is crucial. And, you know, it's often said that the next big global war is going to be about water. Whether that's correct or not, I don't know. But, you know, we're going to start running out of water soon. And sort of hydrogeology and the understanding of groundwater flow and how we extract it and where can we find it is a fundamental geological discipline. And so there's all these things that we're really, really good at. But nobody knows about them. All they know about is the fact that we suck oil and gas out of the ground and cause climate change and cause oil spills. And we destroy indigenous sites through mining, etc. So we have a very bad reputation, which is deserved in one sense, but actually not really. But
I remember watching your webinar for the AGS, which I believe is still available on YouTube. And there was a really interesting graph that you put up there, Nick, which was about a relationship between the oil price and the enrollment levels within geoscience. And it was showing is that the higher the oil price, presumably meaning there was more money available, more jobs within petrochemical businesses, the more students that were drawn to it. Now, given the amount of time that was covering, it seemed too strong a link to be a coincidence. Do you think that's going to change?
Well, I think it will change. I think it's interesting. I've sent out loads of emails across the geoscience spectrum to, and I'm sure we'll talk about this, a degree apprenticeship thing. Mm. And actually, I've had very few, if any, I think, responses to that call from the oil and gas industry. And I just think that they have got a problem on their hands in terms of the way they are viewed by many people and the things that they have done in the past. I mean, there's been some quite unpleasant stories in the press recently about the way that some of the products that are delivered through petrochemical processes have been forced on companies that are highly carcinogenic and things like that, which are not good, and it gives that industry a bad name. I mean, they're trying very hard to change, and I think, but they're not going to be sucking oil and gas out of the ground. They're going to be doing something else.
Yeah, I was going to say, they're really trying to diversify, whether it's that's just at a marketing level or actually boots on the ground, they're trying to diversify their offering. And if there is a listener out there perhaps geologists working for a petro company, do get in touch. We'd love to hear from you and give you a chance to talk about what's going on within that sector. Emily, I think you'd like to make a comment at that point.
I mean, I think following on from that discussion, I actually think bringing it back to younger individuals thinking about getting into the geoscience industry, now is a really exciting time. We are obviously slowly beginning to move away from oil and gas being a primary source of energy. We are now looking at various different other marine renewables. And you might not think straight away, what's an offshore wind farm got to do with a geology or geoscience degree? But actually what we do in our studies of that ground are fundamental to let those massive systems be constructed. So I think it's interesting that, yes, I think there is going to be a shift away from oil and gas in that traditional sense. But if you are an individual that's very conscious about the environment and the climate, and we now have an opportunity to actually do something about it, getting involved in geoscience to work on the offshore wind farms developments, Norfolk, throughout the UK Shelf Sea, really, now is a great time to be thinking about getting into the industry, and you would actually be directly making a difference.
Yeah, it's a multi-billion pound industry, and certainly the amount or the percentage of the build cost relating to foundations and ground investigation for those types of structures is far higher than anything on land. So as well as doing something positive for the environment, it also can be very lucrative. Nick, circle back a little bit. We were talking about perceptions of courses and course experiences, and I know that's something that you've given a lot of thought to, and you presented some ideas around something called urban geoscience, an alternative course. I don't know whether you've actually got that down in terms of a syllabus, or whether that you were using that to sort of present the case, and maybe it's gone in a slightly different direction, but can you bring us up to date with that?
Yeah, I mean, I think this idea has been around for a while, actually, but I think it's sort of gelled in my mind when we start looking at the sort of ethnicity of students taking geoscience, and the fact that actually it's around about 10% of the student population taking geosciences are from black, Asian, or minority ethnic BAME background. And when you compare that to the number of BAME students in the community between the ages of about 18 to 24, I think is around about 18%. That might be a bit wrong, because that's the 2011 census numbers, but it's going to be around that. But then when you move into the urban environment, that goes up to around about 33 to 40% of young people are from an ethnic minority, and there's hardly any that go into geoscience. So they're missing out on this absolutely fantastic, life-changing degree that could lead to, as we've discussed, to loads of fantastic different types of careers. And so I was just thinking around how do we sort of, and those students generally from an inner city environment have very little opportunity to go and visit places of geological interest. They're in an inner city environment. And so the idea of sort of bringing geology into the urban environment, and essentially as engineering geologists, geotechnical engineers, that's really what we do anyway. But this is couched in a slightly different way. So it's all about sort of understanding the ground beneath our cities, but then also being able to utilize the space. So one would incorporate, obviously, geology as the foundation of that type of degree, and then add in things like contaminated land, soil mechanics, rock mechanics, etc., but then expand that out into looking at how you actually utilize the underground and also utilize resilience, so geothermal, as you've mentioned before, groundwater resource, and design of underground space, so the utilization of underground space and utilization of the geology. It's a degree of that nature yet, but I think with potentially a degree apprenticeship on the horizon.
Yes, I was going to come on to that. I mean, I think that you've raised some really valid points there, and whether that sort of is reflected in a single course or not, probably not as important as getting the message out there that we need to appeal to a broader cross-section of the community. Certainly in terms of how we provide those educational opportunities. So apprenticeships, you and I were chatting probably 4 or 5 years ago about a degree apprenticeship, which was actually, I think, a master's level degree apprenticeship, which is I think now in place. And if it's not already in place, it's very, very close to being in place.
It's very, very soon to be. So the standard and everything's written, but yep. It's not been published yet, I don't think.
Yeah.
I so did when have we, a look, but.
Yeah. So it's called a level 7 degree apprenticeship. So should make it clear, when we're talking masters in this particular instance, it's not something that you could do post A levels. You would need probably a first degree or a lot of industry experience before taking that on. It would be the equivalent of a single year master's. But there is also, excitingly, a proposal, Nick, for a bachelor's equivalent degree apprenticeship, which I think would appeal to a lot of young people. What do you think the big draw is for apprenticeship schemes?
I think there are obviously degree apprenticeship schemes in civil engineering, which has been around for a while now, maybe 2 years, I think, maybe three, I'm not sure exactly, but around about 2 to 3 years. And they're proving to be very, very popular. And there is not one in geoscience. And I just think the advantages are, well, it's almost a no-brainer, really, for a very practical, hands-on, skills-based and academic-based degree like a geoscience degree, then the student works as an apprentice for the company, so they get paid. Their fees for taking the degree are paid for out of the apprenticeship levy. So essentially they come out at the end of it with an apprenticeship qualification and a degree qualification without any debt, which is a fantastic thing. And obviously they get on-the-job training and the academic part of the degree at the same time. So these are normally longer than 3 years. They're normally, say, 5 years, because obviously you've got to split the academic training up in a way that would suit the industry. And for the employers, they've got this fantastic resource that will be dedicated and loyal to them, totally trained up from the age of 18. Fantastic. I it's a no-brainer. And I know, I mean, if that had been available to me at many years ago, I would have done that for sure.
Me too. Yeah, I think, I could see from the year out that I had coming back,
yeah.
How useful that was to my studies, and to be able to do
yes.
that in parallel for sort of 4 or 5 years, that would have been absolutely brilliant. I know Julia and Emily, come to Julia first, you both done a master's part-time, so it wasn't an apprenticeship, but I guess the principles of having work alongside academic development, you've seen the benefits of that.
Yeah, definitely. And although probably trying to manage the master's and a job full-time was like the hardest thing I've ever had to do, it was so beneficial and I've learned so much from it. And I was able to apply the applications or apply the knowledge that I'd gained from that master's into my job role and how the two related, which was really helpful. Just going back to what Nick was saying with regards to the degree apprenticeships, it's interesting because I think both when Emily and I went to university or when we were at secondary school, you were expected to go to sixth form almost, and then you were picking your university choices. And apprenticeships weren't really considered at that stage and were almost seen as the lesser qualification. But that's, in my view, and I think in the industry view, it's very much changed. And there's an increase in the routes that you can get into construction. And that could be through traineeships, apprenticeships, and as Nick said, the degree apprenticeship routes. And if I was going back now, or if I was in the position where I was at secondary school, you know, I was post 16 or 18, and looking at my career pathway, I would definitely go down the apprenticeship route, because the work and managing work and education is beneficial.
Yeah, I think it's just to provide a bit of balance that there probably is a stigma to a certain extent in terms of degree apprenticeships. Some people don't view it as the equivalent. That will change as soon as students start coming through and people can see the quality that they're delivering. So we're talking about a really short space of time.
Definitely. Completely agree. And I think as well, in order to go for a degree, I think you have to be a certain type of person. And with the degree apprenticeship schemes, it means you can be a little bit more hands-on. And yes, it's still academic, but you can, you're dealing with a work situation and then having to manage your time academically, but you can apply them. And it's by understanding what you're doing at work that it makes it maybe a little bit easier to through your degree.
Yeah. And Emily, you've done actually the same master's as Julia at Birmingham. How did you manage that? Because you're based in the south of England, aren't you? And the university was in Birmingham. Practically, how did that work?
It's been challenging, but it's been very rewarding. Firstly, definitely for sure. I'm 2 years into the 3-year program, so whilst it seems perhaps a little depressing that a traditional 1-year course is taking thrice as long, I think it's been a perfect balance of getting involved in your day job, and I was doing pretty heavy site work at the time, so you still had a constant stream of work happening on site. You didn't feel you were missing out on anything developing. But then I was given a really great opportunity by my company to take a bit of time out to travel up to Birmingham for the block modules and step out, do those, and then slot back into work again. I would say at times it was a little difficult if things were delayed on site. Sometimes there was still work happening whilst the lectures were going on. But doing the part-time masters whilst still being at work, like Julia said, it kind of affirms both ways. It really helps your technical academic knowledge because you can understand why we do triaxial tests, for example. But then it works both ways. I could then go back and hand draw a slope stability calc before putting it into computer software for a particular project. And I could verify using my actual brain, I suppose, what this computer output was telling me. So it was hard work. I guess that's more of a, you know, it's an intense version of the degree apprenticeship, perhaps. But again, if those sorts of opportunities had been available to me, you know, instead of doing the traditional university degree, it would have been something that I would have looked into, definitely.
Yeah, well, it's good to hear there's options there. Looking at other options, bursary schemes. Nick, that's something you've been involved with at Portsmouth for years and years.
Yeah, we've been running an industrial bursary scheme on the Engineering, Geology and Geotechnics degree now since 2009. And there's a similar scheme at Surrey as well, which is run through the ICE, the Institute of Civil Engineers. And they're quite similar in the fact that we've got a group of companies. So we've got, around about 14 or 15 companies that sponsor a student through the degree each year. And they get a certain amount of money each year. It's 1,750 quid a year when they're in university. But the scholars get, or the bursary students, should I say, get an 8-week placement at the end of the first year and then a year's placement in between their second year and their final fourth year. It's essentially, it's a sandwich degree anyway. So we have other students that aren't on the bursary taking the sandwich option anyway. So, but it's transformational. It really is. As you said before, Steve, I mean, that year out and that help mentoring in your studies, in your final year project, et cetera, just improves the overall importance, performance of the student cohort by significantly. We've seen a, you know, easily proven increase in the number of 2-1 and first class degrees since we've been running the sandwich degree version, but also the industrial bursary scheme as well. It's a great thing.
Yeah, and as an employer, actually, having taken several of Nick's students in the past, that it was great to see the development during the course of the industrial placement year, and also subsequently their career development. And I'm pleased to say that whilst none of them are within the business, I'm still very much in touch with some of the individuals, and pleased to see how they're getting on and what fantastic engineers and people that they are.
Yeah, I mean, the degree itself is, I think, 95% of the students go on into the ground engineering, let's call it that, sector. And remain there for their careers, I think, which is really, really good. But I mean, I think the mentoring aspect is really important. And I think the stuff, Steve, that you've been doing with Ground Forum is a really important step forward.
Thank you. Yeah. So for those that aren't aware, we have mentioned it on a few podcasts in the past, the Ground Forum mentoring scheme offers opportunities for students, and we took 40 students last year to be paired with an industrial mentor who would effectively coach them on in terms of technical skills, personal skills, and looking at getting jobs. So next year it's going to be focused on second year students predominantly. We go out to, I think it's about 7 universities at the moment, and they share the information with their students, and then we assess the application. This will happen sort of October this year. Pair the student with the industrial mentor. We'll get them out to site. We'll have a little workshop. So we'll do a CV workshop. We'll do interview skills workshop, and we have a short internship as well. So we secure with every student this year a 2-week work placement, and of course that can develop into actually a longer term placement over the summer, but we do a 2-week work placement, which has been really well received. So we actually had the review of the year with some of the students and the mentors last week, and there was some amazing success stories, and from both sides, it's not, you know, it's great. Not just one way. Wonderful to see, and I think the feedback from the universities has been good as well. So long may that continue. Julia, I think you want to make a comment?
Yeah, so I just wanted to say I sat in on the celebratory event for the Ground Forum mentoring scheme, and although I'd had no previous involvement in the scheme, I was really impressed by some of the students and how they took the time out to build their own confidence, and how that affected how they would progress through their degree as well. Because yes, they were improving their CV and their soft skills, but also how that they could apply their degree to the industry. So it's very good, and look forward
to
seeing the students next year.
Well, hopefully you'll be interested in becoming a mentor next year, Julia and Emily.
Yeah, I think we've already been asked, so it'd be
brilliant.
A great opportunity.
Let's now look at something slightly earlier in career development, which is getting kids interested in geoscience. So this is perhaps students that haven't even chosen their A levels yet. What can we do to attract them into making the right choices and encourage them to join the geoscience sector?
So for me, this is something that I'm really passionate about, and it's something with the ECG and also the BGA Early Careers Group that we're wanting to get into, because when we are speaking to students, and this is even primary and secondary school students, they're not aware of the different opportunities that are available to them. And I think it's, you have to have different conversations and there's different approaches depending on who you're speaking to. But what we need to be doing is educating, let's say at secondary school, educating them as the different opportunities within engineering and geoscience, so they can make informed choices at GCSE level, which then we're talking about STEM subjects, so science, technology, engineering and maths. And also by highlighting the opportunities that are available to students, we're highlighting that they're open to everyone regardless of race, religion, gender or social economic background, and therefore ensuring that we are providing everyone with an opportunity at the right time, and then thus promoting inclusivity at that stage, which will follow on in future years.
Emily, is there any sort of packs that people can take out there to schools at the moment that you're aware of?
I think the Geological Society has obviously highlighted themselves that there is a shortage of geoscience students coming up through degree ranks, at least. And I think they had highlighted themselves that actually it needs to go one step back, much like Julia mentioned, where we do need to start going back to secondary schools. I think it's interesting that geography is taught as a single subject at secondary school. And as we all know, that is all encompassing, and geology is one very small part of that. You then have the three core sciences, physics, chemistry, biology, and they have little bits of geoscience in there, geophysics, obviously in physics itself, but then kind of the contamination aspect in biology and chemistry, for example. So I think there are opportunities, if these packs don't already exist, for them to be created. And that's something that both mine and Julia's early careers groups really want to start producing. And again, with one or two industry people to physically go to an institution or, you know, record some resources to essentially act as a case study to say, look, we're here, you know, we are real people. I think that's a big part of it, that there is still this image of what a traditional geologist might look like, for example. So it'd be nice to change that, but it's definitely taking a step back and targeting the younger school children to, again, make it more accessible for the future.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of actions there. One is to create those profiles, and I know the Ground Forum are looking at updating their website and having people on there, video, because video is such a great way to engage and share that information with particularly young people, to show people in the field, in the office, what they're doing, the sort of software they're using, or the plant they're operating. So I know that is in the pipeline for the next sort of 12 months. There's also the plan to join up all these early career groups. I say all, I think we've got like three within the geo sector, but it's a start, and hopefully we can bolt more on. So I'm sure you and Julia, Emily, will be working closely together, and hopefully, yeah, if those packs aren't there already, and I've got a feeling that the Ground Source Heat Pump Association might have something that might be a good starting point, that we can pull some really useful tools together, so people within our businesses that have got a knowledge can actually go out there to local schools and sell the industry, as we've all said, it's a fantastic industry within which to work, but actually sell it to people. But it'd be wrong of me not to give you an opportunity to plug some of the activities going on within the early careers group. So Emily, tell us what's happening within the BGA.
Yeah, so we're doing quite a lot at the early careers group at the moment. We're very excited to be back in person in the next few months. We are preparing for a new annual event that this year is going to be held in October. It's a early careers and networking event, essentially, with the British Geotechnical Association. So we're looking at having a room in the Institute of Civil Engineers building in London. And we're going to be operating a mixture of speeches from both industry links, but also quite importantly, academic institutions to really explain, I guess, in more detail, exactly the opportunities that are available in geotechnics. And we're also going to be mixing in some of the career development aspects and CV writing, for example, and looking at the next job step, I guess, for some young professionals, because it's all well and good having a graduate job, but sometimes you do need to, you know, move on in the future too. So this is going to be a really great event for us. I'm really looking forward to it. I think it'll be great if we can be back in person again. Networking is really important. I think you learn so much about the industry and all sections of it by speaking to other people.
Cool. And Julie, as the FPS chair, obviously I'm quite aware of some of the events that you've hosted already this year and got coming up. There's, do you want to mention the Bower one amongst others?
Yeah, so similar to Emily, we have our first in-person event in August, which was the postponed Bower event. So that's the event with Bower equipment. So that'll be really exciting because we'll get to see the range of equipment in terms of the rigs that the Bower equipment are offering. And I know that one of their rigs is particularly going on to the BBGE Bashi Saltons joint venture. So it'd be interesting to see the mechanics of the rig and how that impacts the particular powered solutions that they're putting in. And then in terms of other events that I have planned for the future, in particular this year, we've got a presentation from Tony Sucklin, the director of A², so he'll be discussing the design life cycle of a project and potentially touching upon the site investigation side of things, because I know he's quite passionate about that. And we are also looking at a series of contractual webinars, because although we don't have that many people within their early career that look at the commercial side of things, I think it's very important to have that contractual awareness. So we've got Martin Ramskill in, who are a construction consultancy company, to present some webinars on that. So that should be really exciting, and I'm looking forward to that.
Great. And I know there's been other webinars, such as the one on grouting techniques, that are actually available to go back to on the FPS website as well.
Yeah, and just before I took up my tenure as chair, we also had the event from Matt Smith, which was on rotary board piling and piling with support fluids. So that's available to catch up, should you wish.
Brilliant. Well, good to hear there's so much activity going on, and that development, learning doesn't stop after university, whether it be a master's option or just simply continual professional development. There is support out there for you, so please, if you're listening, take advantage of that. And at this point, I'd just like to thank all my guests. Sorry, Nick, you got one last point too.
I just wanted to sort of come back on sort of an earlier point that was being made about outreach to schools. We need to do that, and we need to get in actually at 11-year-olds for sure, because that's when they really start to make decisions. And there's research behind that can demonstrate that, particularly for STEM subjects. In terms of PACs, the Geological Society of London certainly have loan PACs, as does the Geological Association. And myself and Julia were in a discussion this morning with the Geological Society of London, and they are going to arrange a webinar on outreach as a CPD course for probably late October. So for anyone to join, and get sort of first-hand hints and guidance on how to effectively reach out to sort of younger people, which I think will be really, really useful, because it's not easy.
No, you've hit the nail on the head there, effectively, because there's lots of people out there that are passionate. You know, I've gone into a school in the past and been quite disappointed by the experience, to be honest, because it's hard, you know, you're trying to sell something and not everybody there is that interested. So you've got to have the right tools to do it. You've also got to structure the event in the right way, so you're getting people along that are actually have got some level of interest in the topic already. So you do need to engage with the schools correctly.
There is one other thing. You were talking about platforms for dissemination of information. Now, the Geological Society of London, once again, but they have actually developed a really fantastic platform designed for exactly what you want to do. So it's called Geon. It's going to be launched in September. And it's really to enable materials, resources, etc., to be transferred from a platform for all of that, so that you're not having a multitude of different websites, each with their own little sort of collection of resources. If people want to, they can then add those to the Geon site, and that's going to be linked very much to schools and teachers.
Wonderful. Well, what we'll try and do is when we share this podcast on social media, we'll stick any useful links on there to our various different trade bodies. And you're saying that one's still in development at the moment?
It's on trial at the moment, but it will be launched in September. So we were told this morning. So
can I just add as well, Steve, that there are platforms available at the moment with regards to outreach, whether that be like Go Construct or there is Geoscience for the Future, which is set up by university or alumni university students. So there are things out there, but what the Geological Society of London are doing is really exciting because it's almost a LinkedIn for geoscience individuals, so it'd be accessible to all, as Nick's rightly said.
Thanks to all of our guests for their contribution. If you're interested in this topic and would like to learn more about how you can get into geoscience or support the next generation, please get in touch with us via LinkedIn. Thank you.